Welcome to Momentum Magnet, a podcast to inspire your growth. I'm Karen Morales, and your host in helping you find ways to make positive changes for your business, health, relationships, and life. We always have a path to a happier ending, so let's get started today. Welcome to Momentum Magnet. We're here every week talking to people who make a difference in so that you can put new tips to work for your life and business. Today is no different. I have the pleasure of introducing Kelsey Colzer to the show. Kelsey is the first female and Black coach of a Why can I not speak today? Apparently, you're making me nervous, Kelsey. We haven't even started the show of an NCAA hockey team where she will be starting the inaugural season in the 2021 fall season in the Philly University Arcadia. She has a very impressive background, having been co-captain her senior year of the Princeton University hockey team, making it all the way to the All-American. She's been Ivy League Player of the Year, and she was actually first round draft pick for the Female Professional Hockey League. Today, we're going to talk about breaking barriers, paving a path when no one has gone before you, and how this girl, who was the first female in her hometown to play with the boys, already became a coach in her 20s. So, Kelsey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. I thought it was so interesting reading through your story and hearing about how you, as a little one, pushed your mom to let you play hockey. What was the genesis? You just loved ice skating, or you saw the boys do it, or how did that come to be?
Yeah, so I actually pretty much grew up around the rink. You know, we had a very close-knit family, and my two older cousins played hockey. My uncle coached their teams. He's, you know, coached my teams growing up. And so it really was, you know, just that kind of family grown passion and love for the sport of hockey that really ultimately got me started. I was always supporting their games, watching. My mom would drag me to like their tournaments. And so I was pretty much just always around the rink. And then, you know, I finally got to the age where I could, you know, ask her if I could just get on the ice myself instead of just watching. And so she was definitely hesitant at first, just, you know, not knowing quite where hockey could ultimately take you. It wasn't that popular, especially amongst girls in our area at the time. And so, you know, she kind of was like, you know, I don't know, do girls play this sport? And so it took a little bit of coaxing, yes, but, you know, she did finally, you know, get me in some learn to skate clinics, and it just kind of took off from there.
And how old were you when you started?
So I started at the age of 4.
Little, right? I mean, it's getting way more popular. I grew up in California, so hockey was not a thing, right? Maybe it is now, but definitely a couple decades ago wasn't. So the first experience I ever had with it was on the East Coast. But now I have many friends whose girls play hockey, and it seems to be, you know, as popular for the girls as it is for the boys. Do you feel like that has changed, or there's still some barriers with kids?
Yeah, it definitely, that you've seen a huge upswing in young girls that are playing the sport, which is definitely amazing. There's so many more girls programs so that girls don't have to play in all boys leagues on all boys teams like I did growing up. And I think that that's something that we've seen, you know, really develop in the last like 10 or so years. So unfortunately a little late for me, but it certainly is something that's gained a lot of traction. And I think we're just kind of consistently seeing it grow. You know, we're hopeful that COVID doesn't, you know, kind of pump the brakes on that, but you know, we're very hopeful that the sport continues to grow amongst, you know, the population of young girls, you know, in America. And, you know, Canada's already, you know, heads above us when it comes to that. So just keeping the momentum going is definitely important.
And even in Europe, I have a friend who moved to Sweden, and she has 3 really serious hockey players, and her daughter's league is just as competitive as the boys. So growing up being the token female on these male teams, what was that like for you? Was it different? Was it good?
Yeah, you know, it was it was certainly awkward in, at times. But I definitely think that I was fortunate to grow up playing with the same group of boys. We aged up at the same times. We stayed together on the same teams. And so once you got, and we started so young that it wasn't as awkward. So by the time, you know, things start to get a bit awkward where you're getting into, you know, the early teens of young boys and, you know, sometimes just frankly, the lack of maturity that's going on, especially in a locker room. I was already just so used to them. They were so used to me that, that it made it a lot less awkward. Now, you know, then you turn and I had taken some years off and played just girls hockey. And then my sophomore year of high school, I decided to play on our high school team, which was primarily boys. There was myself and one other girl on the team. And, you know, it's certainly, it's, you started just to feel that, that like awkwardness and just discomfort, you know, kind of taking stage more. And by no means from them, it was just, you know, I had spent so many years then in a girls' locker room. And so kind of trying to, you know, transition back and, you know, kind of you have that mindset was definitely different. But I think the sport as a whole, I am glad for, you know, my upbringing in the boys' game, because I think it helped to make me the player that I am. It is a slightly different style of play. And I think that's something that kind of, you know, helped push me ahead when it came to, you know, recruiting and other things, other aspects of the game that, you know, I really excelled at when it came to college.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, gender's become such a sensitive topic in sports and in life recently. It was a question my son asked me recently. My daughter's a softball player. She's only 10. She made it to the finals. It's championship under the lights tonight. So big day here. And he said, "Mom, why are all the softball coaches men?" And I'm like, "That's a really great question." He's like, "I mean, they don't even know how to pitch right. They've never done it." I'm like, "That's a beautiful, beautiful question." He's like, "Well, how can they teach something they don't really know?" And I said, "You know, it's challenging. I mean, this is volunteer. This is like
right.
local leagues. It's not a paid position." But it begs that question of, you know, does coaching really vary with gender? Like, do you feel, or is it, it's not so much the natural born sex of the leader. It's just if they're a good teacher or not. Do you think that matters?
Yeah. You know, I've had experience with, you know, both male and female coaches. I actually, throughout my entire playing career, did not have a single, or I had one, the year that I played high school actually was the only, my 1 year out of, gosh, how many years did I, but I mean, 1 year out of basically 20 years yeah. playing hockey, I had one season that I had a female head coach. Now I had female assistant coaches, you know, that I ultimately turned to a lot. But it is so interesting, the difference in style and the difference in how you can have interactions between the two. And I think that's something that makes it special to have access to a female coach, you know, especially at a young age. You know, I had coaches that kind of ran the gamut when it comes to personalities, you know, in terms of my male coaches. And, you know, I had the very quiet ones. I had the very loud screamers. But, you know, so it was always interesting, you know, just the dynamic between players and coaches when you have a female versus a male. A lot of coaches do very well. And you're right. The biggest aspect is just their ability to teach you and coach you and get through the tactics that they're trying to get through. So it's I think just ultimately, if you have a good communicator, you could be, you know, any sex, any gender, and, you know, still have success. But just the connection that you can have with a fellow female coach, especially as you get older, you know, into high school and college, just the way you can communicate with them, I think, kind of can help ease those processes and, you know, just keep the flow of communication a bit easier, and find ways to connect a lot easier, as opposed to, you know, kind of walking that little bit of awkward tightrope between, you know, your coach and how much you can actually joke with them. And, you know, if they'll understand, you know, some of the things that you're saying and why you're saying it, you know, because you're a young woman and he's not. So it is interesting. I think obviously the number one aspect of a successful coach is just frankly how well you can communicate and teach. But there is that also, you know, just personal aspect that I think also plays a big role, especially when you're getting through to young women.
Yeah. And there is always that magic factor that you can't really predict. It's just some people jive better with others. So that's interesting. So you got your mom to say, okay, you can get on the ice at four. And we quickly saw, or she quickly saw, you quickly saw that you had talent, right? You were keeping up with these kids. When was that switch? And what happened to that switch go off in your head to say, like, I think this is my future. Like, this is my career. This is my calling. How does that crossover line happen between I'm really good and this is a hobby to I want to make this my livelihood?
Yeah, you know, I really think that when I started playing, you know, all girls hockey is when, you know, that switch really flipped for me, because, you know, I realized the talent, like the full talent that I had, you know, in transitioning over to the girls game, which, you know, at the time was not as fast and as skilled as it is now. And so, you know, I did see, you know, that what my skill and where my skill could take me. I think that was kind of that first, you know, that starting point for me that made me realize, okay, if I, you know, if I put the hard work in now, this really can be what I do for a long, long time. And it can be what I do in college. And, you know, the game was always, always fun for me. I always wanted to keep playing, but I would say it wasn't until like late middle school, early high school, that I really realized where the game could take me.
Right. I mean, it's interesting. I work with businesses of all sizes coaching about marketing, and I often work with female entrepreneurs. And I had a conversation with a female yesterday that was a very common one that I have. Someone basically saying that, you know, she almost needed coaching and some help in realizing her own worth in her business to charge more, right? I had to say, right, you know, you have a waiting list. People are coming to you in droves. You can't accept all this work, but you're not competitively priced. Why? Like you're a top tier value and you're giving yourself like middle market. You're not a Sonata, you're a Mercedes. Like, come on. And she was like, wow, this is hard for me. And I think it's hard for a lot of women. I'm wondering, without seeing a bunch of women playing professionally and coaching, was that something that you innately knew, or did somebody have to kind of push you to see the future differently?
Yeah, you know, I was lucky enough, I think, to grow up at a time where, you know, there weren't very many, you know, female hockey players in, you know, mass media or social media or things like that. But we were in the spot where the game was developed enough that, you know, I knew I could go and play Division I hockey. And so that, I think, was, you know, the most important aspect, is that maybe I didn't necessarily know that specific person that I could look up to that was playing Division I hockey, but I knew that in general it was there. So it was something that I could strive for. I think as well, being so close to Princeton, where I wound up going, and living in the area, gave me the opportunity, you know, from really sophomore year of high school on, to go and watch some of those games. So, you know, I didn't have that specific personal connection with, you know, with a role model who was doing what I wanted to do, but I had, you know, those, you know, kind of general aspirations that I could physically see, which I think was definitely very important, you know, for me and my progress. You know, to kind of know, okay, this is ultimately what it's going to take. You know, I knew I had skill. I knew I had talent. I knew I could do it. But obviously getting to that next level, you know, you have to be just 10 times more dedicated than really I was in high school. You know, it came relatively easy to me. And so, you know, being able to see that and being able to, you know, have that in, you know, kind of in the near future, I think that was something that was really important for my development. And I think part of it was kind of just this innate knowledge and knowing and confidence in myself saying, like, I know I can do it. But obviously having something to directly look to was definitely important in my development in terms of how I was actually developing that action plan and coming up with those goals and things that I needed to do on the day-to-day to get there.
So when you got to Princeton and you have a degree in psychology, how did you balance serious athletics and academics? I mean, that's not an easy thing to do. I know that when I work with a lot of Fortune 500s, especially in like private equity or banking or those really competitive, highly sought after jobs, they always pick the college athlete first, right? They say, if you can excel in college athletics and go to a good school, you can do anything. So did you find that balance to be hard? And did you ever have that feeling of like, oh God, I can't, doing both is challenging because I have to make sacrifices?
Yeah. I think like anything else, college is just a huge transition, right? And so for me, it really took probably until like halfway through my sophomore year to really get into the swing of things when it came to figuring out that balance between, you know, the hockey side of things and my academics. And I certainly struggled freshman year. I, you know, like a lot of kids, switched my major after coming to the point where I kind of sat down with my mom and said, like, something's got to give. I can't, I'm in too deep. I'm struggling too much. I either, you know, I remember telling her at one point that, you know, I think that I wanted to like leave the school and like take time off or do, like, I couldn't, I was at my breaking point. And so, you know, ultimately for me, what helped was, you know, just finding a new major that, oh, that really like flipped things on its head. And I found so much success, you know, after coming to that point. But you know, it took a lot of those, like, you know, hard nights and just a lot of, you know, kind of working in the trenches to get myself back, you know, into the swing of things and get myself on a routine that worked for me to balance those academics and those athletics. So, you know, it's funny because a lot of times when I question myself now, you know, all I have to do is kind of like think back to that moment and be like, you know, it's not that you can't do it. You just have to find a different way to do it. Right. And so, you know,
that's so important for people to hear that, because I think, you know, you read your background and you're thinking to yourself, like, this is a woman who's never missed a workout. Like, I mean, I like pushed myself to do half-ass Peloton this morning and this girl like charges, like, how do you get that? But it's so, it's just feels good to hear for the rest of us that everybody, no matter how successful you are in your life, you always have moments where you hit a wall. That is a universal truth for all of us. And it's not always talked about. So I thank you for saying that. Yeah, there were some moments in college that were hard because we all had them.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was hard for me to admit to myself and realize that, like, I didn't fail in, yeah, you know, I didn't fail. It just was not what was right for me. So, you know, that was hard for me to, I went into Princeton as an engineering major because, I had absolutely no idea actually what I wanted to do when I was leaving college, but, you know, everyone told me I had to pick a major and, you know, I enjoyed math and science in high school. So, you know, it was everyone else, you know, in my life, except for the people that were actually close to me and all my teachers and, you know, friends, parents and things like that, that, you know, led me down that path that ultimately was just not the right path. No. But it took a lot for me to admit that I, you know, I wasn't a failure just because that wasn't the right path for me. And so that was, you know, I think once I reached that mark and kind of got over that and, you know, I was able to really find so much more success just once I found my path.
I mean, it was just impressive to think to try engineering at Princeton. I mean, I would never even try that. That would be off the table even before the conversation started. So the 4 years at Princeton, you really were able to go far with the team. And at what point in that kind of trajectory did you start thinking about, Mom, I want to go pro? And when did the coaching idea come to fruition? Because you're young to be a head coach in the double NCAA. So that's amazing. How did that all happen?
Yeah. So I really think that, you know, the thought to go pro probably happened, you know, towards the beginning of my junior year. Like my sophomore year, I had, you know, started to find a lot of success on the ice, and, you know, I had gained a lot of confidence when it came to, you know, my hockey abilities. During my junior year, though, is when the NWHL started. And so I finally had I finally had an outlet, you know, that I could actually see myself going to after college. You know, there had been women's professional league, the CWHL, which was the Canadian Women's Hockey League. But, you know, the nearest team to myself would have been Boston, which, you know, I never saw myself moving that far away from my family. And so it ultimately was probably my junior year where, you know, I was still finding continued success on the ice, but now I had this league that, you know, had started up that I could see as an outlet for myself. And so that then became, you know, the goal junior and senior year. And then, you know, once I graduated, you know, I was obviously thinking about what I wanted to do professionally and, you know, if I would enter corporate America or what I would do. And coaching was definitely on my list of things that I wanted, but obviously knowing where I wanted to be in the area, there weren't a ton of opportunities. And so, you know, I ultimately did go into corporate America. I got a job doing corporate recruiting and was playing professionally and really reached this point of like not feeling fulfilled with, you know, what I was doing in my daily life, you know, outside of playing professionally. That was great. And I was still getting, you know, that hockey fix, but for me, it wasn't enough. You know, what I was doing day to day, 9 to 5 is not something that I was very passionate about. And so that's what ultimately led me, you know, to the opportunity here at Arcadia. The position opened up and I had reached that, once again, I had reached that tipping point of, you know, I need to make a change. Something's got to give because I'm just not happy in what I'm doing. And, you know, it was the perfect timing for this position and opportunity to come about. And, you know, I the second that I heard about it, I applied that night. And here we are today.
So it was a job that was open. I was thinking, given the proximity to where you're living, that maybe you pushed to get them to start a program, but that was perfect timing.
Yes. Yes. They had announced that they were starting a program, actually probably like earlier in the year, but then opened the position. I want to say like, you know, June or July. And so, you know, I had just wrapped up my second season professionally and, you know, was kind of at that year and a half, 2 year mark, of working in, you know, my corporate recruiting job. And that's when the opportunity at Arcadia really opened up. The position opened up for head coach, and you know, I threw my resume in there right away.
That's interesting. Maybe it's corporate recruiting. I actually interviewed Ramon Garcia, who was a college athlete at Colby and was playing professionally in Europe, came back and took a job in corporate recruiting, ended up having the same kind of experience that you did, he said he didn't want to live. It was so bad, put on a ton of weight and ended up opening a fitness academy for personal trainers and changed his life around. I think it would be really hard to move from a lifestyle that's not sedentary to take one of these desk jobs and be sitting and smiling and dialing. I mean, that's a tough transition.
Yeah, it was. And I had always kind of told myself that like, I knew sales wasn't for me, but you know, really not having any clue what I really wanted to do. You know, once I graduated, it just kind of, I wound up landing there. It was a great company. I really enjoyed like all my colleagues and things like that. But what I physically was doing was just not fulfilling for me. You're right. I just, you know, I would kind of dread that drive into work and, you know, would, the goal was, I forget what the goal was, like to make 70 phone calls a day or something. And it just,
his goal not, too.
It just was, funny. It just did not. Yeah. I, you know, it was hard for me to stay motivated doing that. It was hard for me to, you know, stay motivated to like, even, you know, dedicate myself to my hockey because it just wasn't, you know, all day, every day, I was doing the same thing. And that was just ultimately not, once again, just not for me.
So what's your vision for this program? I mean, the beautiful part is now that you're at Arcadia, you're starting the season in the fall, you got to build the team. So there wasn't like a roster of girls already there. So talk a little bit about your vision of what's your coaching philosophy and how are you going to create your like legacy in your program?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, right, the long-term goal is to have a successful program when it comes to the wins and losses. But, you know, I think what's so important for me, especially as we're getting this thing started, is, you know, playing my role in these young women's lives that I've had other coaches play for me in terms of helping me understand, you know, my true power and my personal power and the voice that I have and everything that I could accomplish myself personally. That's something that I've had some amazing female role models, you know, in my life, especially growing up and throughout college that, you know, helped me to really understand the value in my position and who I am. And so I think, you know, having that opportunity to do the same for the young women that are going to be playing ice hockey at Arcadia is something that I'm most excited about, you know, and just ultimately building something that is long lasting, you know, even potentially beyond, you know, when I'm at Arcadia. And so I think that's something that is, you know, I started back in October of 2019 when I started at Arcadia and, you know, began recruiting and finding the right young women to, you know, really set the standard and set the tone for what's to come. And so that I think is that's the vision is, you know, just to really help these young women feel empowered and develop a program that, you know, has hopefully a long history of success.
It's beautiful as a coach. I mean, that feels like the most exciting thing to start from scratch. Is it a hard sell to the players who are like, I don't know what your, you know, stats are going to be? Has that challenging or are they open to the opportunity of starting?
I think, you know, it depends on the person. You know, some people, they want to see that history of success and some people are really excited at the prospect of starting that themselves. And so I think it just depends on the person. And, you know, obviously there's also, you know, there's some unknowns when it comes to joining a newer program. So I think that once again, I think it just depends on, you know, who you're talking to and what they find value in. A lot of people find it to be actually very exciting to get to start a program and, you know, be that foundation and have your name in the history books. And then, you know, others just, they're in a different path and, you know, they're really looking for, you know, a team that has that history of success and you know, it's kind of like to each their own. And I'm obviously excited at the group of girls that have, you know, agreed to come to Arcadia and, you know, somehow being a part of their life for a long time.
Yeah. That's really, it feels exciting and you're definitely going to get a ton of press coverage this year and you know, watching it. So that's also fun. All eyes. So switching gears a little bit, I'm sure you watch the NCAA basketball tournament or at least watch the TikToks in March and April. There's a lot of pressure, right? For still reducing some of these gender disparages and how things are outfitted. I mean, I think that was pretty crazy to see the men versus female locker room for the tournament. Is that something that you still see quite often in college athletics, even in hockey? And I know you're working on some national task force to kind of make sure that equality is there. You want to talk a little bit about your feelings on what you've seen and what you hope to see going forward?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's still a part of, you know, every female athlete's daily life, at really all levels. You know, you see, even starting at youth, you see the disparity between, you know, what coaches are getting paid to coach, you know, young boys teams versus, you know, needing to be a volunteer to coach, you know, young girls. And I think that does, you know, still continue all the way up into, you know, you see professional athletics, you know, women are still fighting for, you know, for that just shred of hope, that shred of equality, you know,
if your first round draft pick in the NHL, you're not working a recruiting job on the side.
No, you're not, you know, you're not using the office gym on your lunch hour to try to, you know, stay fit and get ready for the season. You're not paying out of pocket for, you know, your own injuries because, you know, you just, that's, you know, that's because it's the resources that are available to you. So, you know, you see it at all levels, and it's something that I think is, you know, we've seen social media has had, I think, a pretty big impact on starting to improve that. But, you know, I think if this year has proved anything, and it's certainly, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done, you know, in the sense of, you know, women just not being an afterthought, you know, and not having mistakes like that happen again, where, you know, I don't know how it slips through the cracks, but it just does. And it always seems to for women. So that's, I think, something that, you know, I'm very hopeful at the response that, you know, that led to, you know, especially when it came to the power that social media had to influence change, you know, immediately after that with, you know, some of the girls' male counterparts, you know, really stepping up and making a big deal out of it, because it is a big deal, and leading to a very quick improvement when it came to, you know, the facilities that were available to them. And so I think that's definitely something positive that's come of, you know, some of these instances of late, is just the support that, you know, you see on social media from, you know, the right people, male and female, across social media, that are really pushing for change. So I think that that leads to a lot of optimism, I think, moving forward. But it certainly is something that, you know, women are still dealing with on the day to day.
I know. Sometimes you can say, God bless TikTok. That was a God bless TikTok moment for sure. So it did lead to fast change. So yes. What's next for you? Are you shooting to be the first female coach in the NHL? Are you where are we going next?
You know, honestly, I am, you know, obviously there's, you know, being a part of, you know, an organization like the NHL is, you know, would be an incredible opportunity. You know, I'm obviously focused now on the immediate future and just making sure that, you know, I'm getting Arcadia to, you know, a place that I'm proud of, and, you know, getting everything started in October and just building the excitement leading up to, you know, the end of August when these young women are moving to college for the first time, and supporting them through their first year of college, and just doing the right things, you know, here in the immediate to make sure that, you know, we're just leaving a positive impact on the game of women's ice hockey. I think that that's just so important, especially in where we're at now, and then, you know, kind of building and seeing where things take us in the future.
So that's the perfect segue to my last question. If you were to look out to the hockey players of tomorrow, what is your best Kelsey Colzer tip for the youth players? What's something you wish you knew when you were younger, when you were growing up as a hockey girl?
Yeah, I think it's just that, you know, that hard work and, you know, pushing through those tougher times and, you know, not letting anyone's words really stop you from what you're passionate about. There were plenty of instances where, you know, people told me girls should not be playing hockey, and here I am. So I think that that's something that, you know, I've always taken a lot of pride in, is just, you know, if I have a love for what I'm doing, I'm going to find my way. I'm going to find any way to get it done. And so I think that those would be my words of encouragement, is just, you know, remain confident in what you're doing and why you're doing it. And ultimately, you know, no one's words, no one's, you know, actions are going to stop you from achieving what you want to achieve.
I love that. I'm going to go into the weekend reminding myself that nobody's words are going to stop me from achieving my dream. So if people want to follow you in your career, are you active on one social media platform over another, or do they just watch your coverage on ESPN and NBC Sports and all the other channels that are picking you up?
Yeah, you know, I can be found mostly on Instagram. You know, I would say, you know, Instagram, both my you know, personal page, as well as, you know, Arcadia Women's Ice Hockey's page. Those are kind of my primary. I do have a Twitter. You're welcome to find me there. I don't use it very frequently anymore, I'll be honest. You know, but you know, Instagram, I'm definitely pretty active on, and you can always follow me there and keep up with what I'm doing and what Arcadia Women's Hockey is doing.
It's amazing. Well, I'm actually interested to watch your season in the fall. So that's cool. So thank you for joining us and talking about how to just be brave enough to pave your own path forward and get through those hard times and remember that nobody else defines you. You define your own future. I loved hearing from you. Thank you so much for your time and good luck in the fall.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Momentum Magnet. We're here every Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time to share inspiring comeback stories. We want to hear your reviews and love getting your subscriptions on iTunes and Spotify. For show notes and past episodes, visit MomentumMagnet.com. I'm Karen Morales, keynote speaker, writer, and founder and CEO of Marketing Magnet, a fast-growing marketing agency for purpose-driven companies. Whether you are a business needing an agency, or if you are looking for weekly tips to get ahead, sign up at marketing-magnet.com to receive our weekly inspiration on getting more in your life and business.